Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Nuchtigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, the center of Iowa, the center of it all. I want to remind you that this is fundraiser time, which means we have fun, but we also have the raiser part, which means we're raising memberships. We have memberships ongoing, and thank you to all the members of KHOI who keep us going, keep us on the air loud and clear. And if you're not a member already, you can help keep this radio station on the air loud and clear. Go to khoifm.org/membership, and it will get you there. Yes, it will. So, Donna.
Well, we want to remind you that this wonderful, prolific, and variably amusing, entertaining, and informative radio is all volunteer, it's all local, and no advertising. So we count on the memberships and the listeners and ourselves to produce this and pay for it and be a center of culture and education and all kinds of things that are very, very local.
Speaking of good things that are local, we have with us in our studio today Tom Russell, and you just heard his program, All Things Piano, which brings us beautiful music, and it's a nice, nice thing to do of a Tuesday morning. Welcome, Tom Russell.
Thank you. It's so fun to be here live in the studio, a rare pleasure for me.
Yeah, I hear tell that you lock yourselves away. You lock yourself away in a room with your instruments and your electronic equipment. That's one way to put together a show. But then there's the Donald in the Kitchen way, which we kind of show up and make it up as we go along. And thanks to our fine engineer, Mike Murphy, who saves our tails every now and then.
Oh, yeah. We couldn't do our show the way we do it without this studio space and Mike helping us. And
yeah,
it's lovely to have our home here right on Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames.
Yeah,
our very own little Victorian house with studio space and public space for all kinds of cultural events. This is a wonderful opportunity for the whole city. Come and make your own show if you want to. Or your own podcast.
Yes, very, very. Podcast. It's good to be talking to one another. And it's also good to listen to one another. KHOI does a good job in that regard. Well, today we're going to be talking about recipes. Two dessert recipes. Donna has a recipe book. We've got some news items and all kinds of things going on.
You know, it's spring. We've got the whole produce season to look forward coming in its sequence, starting with asparagus and rhubarb where we are now. And so I bought a few new recipe books that we're going to be talking about. Not that I need more cookbooks, for goodness sake. But the thing is, every once in a while, I use recipe books to kind of get, you know, maybe I should try this thing again. I know how to use tahini, but there's some ways, new ways to do it. Or let's add a few, change it up a little bit so I don't get stuck in my routines. You never want to get bored when you're cooking or when you're eating. And, the improvisational prospects are rather endless.
And it's a lot of fun. And now recipe books all have good pictures. I like the pictures.
And I'm not a TikTok recipe person.
No. It's somehow having the book on your lap is good. And we mentioned this is rhubarb season, and our guest here in the studio, Tom Russell, just proudly took out his cell phone, just like he was showing pictures of his kids, you know. And he said, "Here, look," and it was his rhubarb plant.
We have a beautiful rhubarb plant in our yard. We've lived in our house for 35 years.
Woo!
We used to grow asparagus and potatoes and peppers in the back of our yard, but the trees have gotten so big, there's so much shade that we can only grow a select few plants on the south side of our house now. Rhubarb is one. Arugula is another. We love arugula. And we grow kale during kale season, which is pretty long around here. Mm-hmm. And we grow tomatoes. And we get our beautiful heirloom tomatoes from one of your show's hosts, actually, which is pretty darn fun. Not that I'm pitching anything, but KHOI today.
Aha. Very good. Very good. Yes, fill the world with tomatoes and rhubarb and kale. Oh, yeah. We're doing our best here. We are doing our best. Speaking of rhubarb, I have a rhubarb recipe I would like to discuss. You mentioned trying new things.
Okay, we talked about this rhubarb recipe last week. Mm-hmm. It's a rhubarb upside down cake. I found the recipe in the Washington Post, and what caught my eye about that, and I knew Lana would fall for this. She's so visual.
I did.
So on the upside down part, they took the rhubarb and they cut it in 2-inch pieces and they made like this herringbone pattern, mm-hmm. so that when you flip the cake upside down, you've got a pattern, a geometry on the top of it. And of course, bright red because it was a color photograph. Of course, rhubarb is not always bright red, but sometimes it is. So, and it was a cornmeal cake. So I kind of knew if I put this out there that Lana would jump right on it. And she did. So now she's going to explain how the recipe worked and didn't work, because this is the problem with printed recipes. You get in your kitchen and reality sets in. You have to try it once.
Yeah. I do wish to report that it was absolutely tasty.
Delicious is important.
Delicious was fantastic. Actually, I took it to a potluck, and it went real quick. And it was, yes, and it worked. Yes, the herringbone pattern was there. Some people call it a chevron pattern. I want to mention some things about the recipe, okay? Now, of course, they have this beautiful food stylist who looks at this and makes it, the picture was always lovely. The recipe called for 2 stalks of rhubarb. Wrong. To cover the bottom of the 10-inch skillet.
Of rhubarb could be only 6 inches, or it could be 12 or 14, or that's, okay, that is not. So, not good recipe writing.
Well, you should. It calls for a 10-inch skillet. It is cooked in a skillet, and I actually got out my measuring tape. And yes, I had a 10-inch skillet exactly. And so it calls for more rhubarb than it says. Now, careful. The cake batter overtopped my skillet a bit as it baked. Now, I suppose that depends on how big your eggs are or something.
Well, or how deep is the skillet. Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a whole other thing. Yeah, I've got cast irons in several sizes.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, did you have a rack under it, or it went all over the oven?
Well, as soon as I smelled something burning, I put the racks underneath.
Oh, golly.
And it wasn't bad. It's just enough to make a little bit of a mess. And also, the color was not as red as in the photo, but then my rhubarb is greenish and reddish and not very red kind. And be careful out there. The handling of the warm 10-inch skillet, it calls for flipping it over onto a serving platter, and that is no small thing.
Well, it's still hot?
Yes,
because
this has to, like, fall out. Well, not boiling hot, but it has to be quite warm so it let's go, okay?
So do you have silicone oven mitts or something fancy
I've got very good oven mitts, but still, I was kind of taken aback by the thing. There you were, and oh boy.
Unfortunately, I still cook like I'm in a professional kitchen, and I use towels for everything. Everything.
No, I couldn't use it. I had to use it. Okay.
It's awkward for things like that.
Okay. Those are the things. Kind of be careful that the cake batter did run over. Here, the ingredients for this wonderful thing. What is nice about this recipe is that the cake is a half and half cornmeal flour cake.
Yeah.
The cornmeal is really, really a nice addition.
We have good cornmeal in Iowa.
We do. Okay.
Yep.
1.5 sticks of unsalted butter, 1/2 cup light brown sugar, 12 ounces of rhubarb, but more, I wrote C note, bigger, okay. Okay. 1 1/4 cups all-purpose flour, 1/2 cup yellow cornmeal, preferably medium grind.
Okay? Now, you used the early morning harvest
cornmeal.
Cornmeal. Yeah. And flour, too.
And flour,
right,
too.
Right. So these are Iowa ingredients with your Iowa rhubarb.
And some good taste here. 1 teaspoon ground cardamom, 1 teaspoon baking powder, 1/4 teaspoon soda, 1/4 teaspoon fine sea salt, cup of granulated sugar, 2 large eggs at room temperature, and 1 teaspoon vanilla extract, and 1/2 cup well-shaken buttermilk.
So, oh, right. It had buttermilk in it.
Which was really, I think, I actually measured. Usually I don't measure things. I measured, and it still overran a little bit, but that's fine. You make the, melt the butter and save some of the butter to put in the cake, but you put quite a bit of the butter in the bottom of the pan and arrange and mix the...
Yeah, that's so it slides
the sugar
out, right?
Yeah, it makes the sugar in there. You make kind of a...
Butter sugar on the bottom of the pan?
Uh-huh. And then you... then
is that the white or the brown sugar?
Brown sugar.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And lining up those little rhubarbs.
I thought this would be a moment of talent for
Lana. It was something else. I did it just fine. And it is a fine thing to do. And I would do it again, but I'm going to put something under my pan next time and have some more heavy-duty pot holders to flip the thing over. A 10-inch skillet is kind of heavy.
Yes, it is.
So, those are my observations. And like Dinah said, the recipes, sometimes when you read a recipe, you got to at least try it out once. There's all little things in your kitchen that you are going to learn. Yes, you are.
Now, fortunately, I'm sitting here live, so I can actually ask a question to our talented cooks.
Oh, please.
This is something that I've wondered about repeatedly over the years. Every time I read a recipe, why is it calling for unsalted butter instead of just butter?
It's really simple because it's easier when you're writing a recipe to calculate the amount of salt if you're measuring the salt. So if you're using salted butter, it can skew the amount of... However, I never worry about it at all.
No, but if the recipe calls for salt and you add salted butter, in some cases it could be too much.
Too salty.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. But that's
it's not cooking chemistry or anything like that.
No,
it's just,
no,
all right.
Nothing. It's just being careful not to add too much salt.
I've always wondered.
So if you're using salted butter, you kind of go a little, just slightly lighter on the measured, you know,
gotcha.
Dry salt
right,
that you
right.
add.
Which many of us would do anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Now, I have one other observation to make. I observed thousands of eyes all around central Iowa calculating what size of cast iron skillets they had in their skillet storage area. You know, everybody's thinking, do I have a 10-inch skillet?
I know.
10-inch is kind of standard.
It's pretty standard. That's what I was thinking. I use my 10-inch skillet all the time.
I measure because I do have a smaller one too. And you don't want to be surprised when you're filling it up. Here is a note. You can use a 10-inch springform pan too.
Ooh.
If you want to.
I think that would be a better idea for unmolding it. First of all, it wouldn't be as heavy,
right?
For turning, you know, for
Good
flipping
idea.
It over, and the 10-inch springform pan would be quite likely a little deeper than your skillet, so it wouldn't overflow. So, Lana, next time you try it and you invite me over to see it afterwards, try it with that.
Yeah, it should be.
It's a little, much more lightweight, you know.
Yeah.
So the springform pan, just to get the audio visuals in here, you know, it's the kind that has a little snap lock on the side. So to unmold things, you just flip the little thing and the sides loosen up, and then it should be a lot easier to just tip it over and kind of peel off the bottom plate.
You still need a lot of, you've got butter and sugar working away at the bottom there. So you still have to unmold it a little bit when it's a little warm. Otherwise, it'll turn into candy at the bottom.
Did you have to run a knife between... Well, actually, if you're using the springform pan, it would be really easy.
Yeah.
Separate the rim,
yeah,
then kind of carefully run a knife, and then you can peel the top off.
Yeah. I'm not averse to using parchment paper round at the bottom, which is like, you know, a cook's best friend.
Absolutely.
I did turn it over and it fell out quite nicely. A few little chunkies didn't work, but I'm pretty good at rebuilding, so I rebuilt.
Yeah.
But I must say that it was very delicious. The cornmeal with the cardamom
and the buttermilk. What a good idea.
Oh, it was a very rich, wonderful, a rhubarb upside down.
Okay, now let me ask you one more question. As we progress through the fruit seasons, since you like the cornmeal buttermilk part of the cake, do you think it would translate into making like a cherry upside down cake or strawberry upside down cake? I'm going through the, then we'll get to the peaches and plums.
I would guess all the way to apples. I would guess so. I don't know, but I bet it would.
Why not?
Something that would cook down and run into the cake. Well, it sounds like I've got some testing to do.
Okay. We'll have further updates on this one throughout the season and let you know. I did want to say something, because since we're talking about cast iron pans, I finally retired mine mostly because I use them all the time. They were even my mother's. They're that old, but they are so heavy that, you know, the wrist action, the hand action, the shoulder action, it was a bit much. And I have gone back to carbon steel pans, which are something you use in commercial kitchens. They are lighter by just about half, I would think. But they're the same thing. You have to season them. You don't want them to rust. And I've switched to carbon. They have slightly different shape though, because I don't think you could bake an upside down cake in it. But they're really good. You can stick them in the oven, and they're really good for any kind of sauteing, or like tonight, I think I'm going to be making some Spanish tortillas, which you start in the skillet and you move them into the oven. So if anybody is looking to switch out their trusted, wonderful cast iron, do check out carbon steel. And you have to, of course, you know, season them yourself, but they're real workhorses and they're not nearly as heavy.
Did you have to take out a bank loan to get them?
No, they're not. If you're going to do it, get a good one that is riveted, because, you know, if they're just kind of soldered on or something, they don't last as long. But the riveted ones, usually the ones made in France, they have the best. And so I think I think I have a 10-inch, and it was under $100. Mm-hmm. But it will last the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's just, if your cast irons are feeling too heavy and unmanageable, I still use my Dutch oven, though. There's nothing like a cast iron Dutch oven. Well, people use Le Creuset, mm-hmm, but those are heavy.
Those are heavy, too.
Sometimes you got to have the weight. So.
Well, you got to admit that cooking is a real active sport. Yes, you got to.
Exercise. You know,
you get
a lot of upper body exercise and a lot of leg work. You're standing there in the kitchen for hours at a time.
Well, Tom, you mentioned you've got good, used to have lots of good things growing in your backyard and have some now. Are there some things you like to cook in particular? Or what's some favorite stuff that comes out of your kitchen?
Well, what do you do with all that rhubarb?
We give the rhubarb to our friends for the most part. I did have one piece of delicious rhubarb pie that was baked, I believe, in collaboration with one of our board of directors. Lynn Carey is part of a pie baking club.
Oh, and, I have to have her on about a pie baking club.
Right.
What a good idea.
And I must say, it was quite tasty. So I'm more of the kind of cook that just puts food on the table. And so I like black bean tacos. I make those a lot. You know, for breakfast we have eggs and toast or oatmeal with walnuts and apples. Those are very regular foods that we eat at our house. And then for baking, Mary Jane is the baker at our house, and I appreciate the things that she baked. Like last night, Mary Jane and my sister-in-law, who was visiting Cecily, baked some delicious banana bread that was had almond flour and almond flour, oat flour, oat bran were three of the main ingredients, along with the bananas, walnuts, and you know, it was quite tasty. It was delicious.
Oh, good.
You know, I had
stuff.
Bananas
really
and regular
healthy.
Flours too. All right, we use a lot of nut flours at our
yeah.
house as well.
Uh-huh.
So,
Tom, do you want to remind people how they can find our website and what they can do to become a member?
Well, we are all here today. We started out with my show, All Things Piano, a little while ago, and now we've crossed over into the Don Alanna Baking Show in our studios in downtown Ames, supporting KHOI, which is the heart of Iowa. That's what the HOI stands for. Just remember that. KHOIFM.org is our website. And when you go there, you get to the KHOIFM.org/membership. To find a way to donate money to support this station on the air. And if you just go look at the website, you can find a button that you can click on without all the extra typing. It will take you to a place where you can donate. It's called the Donate button. And I've seen it there regularly when I go and look at that website, which is a great place to go look. There's all sorts of cool stuff. KHOI is a really cool community, a community resource and a community of its own within our town.
Yes, it is. And we're glad for everybody that helps make this station a reality.
Yeah, I want to point out to people that, especially younger people who maybe don't listen to the radio, that you can do this all on your computer, and you can go in and you can listen to it live on the computer, or you can also kind of call up, you know, you can listen to whatever show you want to when you want to, like more like a podcast.
The so, archives.
The archives. That's right.
It's one of those technical terms.
Right.
Kind of, archives.
So like if I want to listen to Tom's show, but I'm busy during that time slot, I can go in later and just put it on when I feel like it, when I want that piano mood music. So
that's right.
We got a great website where you can kind of handle all of these things and personalize it the way you want. Because that's what everybody's used to doing now, what I want, when I want, but we can do that.
From any place on the planet, I
exactly,
might add.
Exactly, exactly. We have lots of people all over the place that listen to Don Alanna Kitchen, not on the radio.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. People actually listen.
You know, and occasionally they let us know that they've listened.
Especially if we screw up on a recipe. Yeah, you know, I tried that. That's happened. So if we want a little feedback, it's always nice to give a little bit of wrong information every now and then to keep you on your toes out there. Yes, it is. But this is let's take a little music break here. This is KHOI, and this is the Don Alanna Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. We're talking about recipes and sweet stuff and rhubarb, and we're here with Tom Russell. Tom Russell, who's another person that puts on a show here on this radio station. That was, you just heard music from the Barn Owl Band. That was banjo player Merle Hall starting out a tune called Johnson Boys. And Tom Russell, you play a lot of instruments, including the banjo, I happen to know.
Including the banjo. And, yeah, Merle Hall, I've always enjoyed Merle's playing. The local musicians around Ames are so many excellent players in all genres of music. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to play in a dance band, the Onion Creek Cloggers. I did 20 years ago. I played in that band for several years. And in that band, I played the mandolin primarily, and guitar a little bit too, and fiddle a little bit as well. But one of the main things that I've played in the last 15 years has been the banjo. And I don't play the style of banjo music that Merle plays. I play more melodic banjo, and my banjo technique was based in all the classical guitar music that I used to play as a youngster. So I have a different right-hand banjo technique than most other players would have. And I just love playing the banjo. I like it a lot. I play banjo in a couple of different bands, primarily original music, but I can play the old standards too.
Good. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're part of Ames, and I'm glad you're part of KHOI. Thank you
for being
with
us today. It's been a blast. Yeah, and yeah, good old KHOI, you guys. You know, we're fortunate to have this station in this town. You know, we haven't been around all that long. I don't know exactly how many years, but I know we could get our archivist to do the research and find out exactly when we went on the air. But I remember the day. I remember when this was pre-broadcast.
I remember being there, but I couldn't tell you what year it was.
We're there. Well, thanks for being on our show. Very good. That was Tom Russell and his show, which comes on before ours. It's called All Things Piano. It is worth a listen.
I want Lana to say a little bit about the Barnell Band, because we use their music all the time, and she selects the music, and there are so many different, you know, you'd think it would sound the same because it's always the same band, the Barnell Band,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
She never runs out of things. It's pretty remarkable stuff.
Well, like most bands, a lot of bands, Barnell Band kind of comes and goes. It's got a core bunch of people, and they've been around for, 35 years. They've been around
all
a long
local
time.
To Ames, yeah.
And
some
I have
really
had the
talented
pleasure
folks.
Of knowing those folks and putting on a barn dance with them, and it's just really, really good. The Barnell Band. We'll hear more of the Barnell Band a little bit later, but Donna always brings in the best recipe books, and give us your latest take on what's going
on. Okay, I found a new one. You know, if you read the food press, you know, like I do, there's always some new cookbook coming out, and every once in a while, I'm like, oh, I'll give that one a try. So this one is called Kismet, K-I-S-M-E-T. The subtitle is Bright, Fresh, Vegetable-Loving Recipes. It's hot off the press. Sarah Kramer and Sarah Hymanson. These are two youngish restaurant chefs from Los Angeles. So it's fairly vegetable-centric. However, what I like about it, what made me spring for it, was that it's a little bit, it's Mediterranean cooking, so it's a little bit like all those Otto Lingi books, you know, lots of miso and tahini and labneh and kind of Middle Eastern spices, but not terribly. It's pretty American in a lot of ways, very accessible. And I find it a little bit simpler, slightly less ingredients than some of the Otto Lingi books.
I want to mention Otto Lingi. We talked about his he has a restaurant.
Yeah, he's
pretty high end stuff.
And he's in London predominantly, and has a lot of big, I mean, I don't know, 5 or 6 cookbooks at this point. And I have a few of them, and they are always interesting and stimulating. And so I thought, all right, let's try this slightly more Americanized version.
Yeah,
I'm kind of pleased with it.
I'm glad you turned me on to Otto Lingi. I want to mention one more thing. For the longest time, Otto Lingi is his last name, and I thought it was, I thought his first name was Otto, and I thought his last name was Lingi. So I was asking Don about that Chef Lingi guy, and she didn't know what I was talking about. So it's
O-T-T-O-L-E-N-G-H-I. I, right. Something like that. So this is a little more simplified, and since it is vegetable centric, you know, that's kind of how I like to eat. As I say, no such thing as too many vegetables. But, you know, they have a good rabbit recipe, several chicken recipes, some fish recipes. You know, it's not vegetarian by any means, but it does put the vegetables in the forward position. Lots of really good salad ideas because we're going to be coming into this. There's a whole section on spreads and dips and things. So I'm going to just pick one. This is going to be the first one that I'm going to try, okay? This is a pine nut pepper schmear, right? S-C-H-M-E-A-R. It says, if ever there was a sauce to pair with grilled chicken skewer, this is it. The combination of pine nuts and peppers, green peppers, evoke a smoky campfire on a summer night. Apart from grilled chicken, this schmear's pairing possibilities are endless. Try it with roasted cauliflower, sautéed green beans, grilled fish, or wherever your imagination takes you. So I think this is one of these things you can, like, it says to holds up for 3 days in the fridge. It's great cold, or you can heat it up. So you take a cup of pine nuts, and you kind of toast them in the oven. You have to be careful because, of course, they will burn. It says to bake them for 15 to 20 minutes at only 275. So keep the heat low in the oven. And then you put your pepper, a green bell, and they also have a jalapeno. So you put the pepper, especially you have to have a gas stove. No, I've done this on electric stoves too. Oh, you just lay it right in the middle of either the flame or on the electric plate and burn it.
This is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right.
You crisp the outside and you keep turning it till it's blackened all over. I do this with red peppers too. In fact, this recipe might be good with red peppers too if you want a pink sauce. And then once it's really blackened and charred, you put it in on a bowl and cover it with a plate, and you kind of let it cool for about 30 minutes. This is a good technique for any time you want to have a charred pepper flavor, because then it continues to cool off and steams itself, and then the black stuff flakes off really easily. I often just, you know, kind of stand over the sink and run my fingers around it till it peels off into the sink because it's messy. It says, okay, so peel the peppers, then cut them in half and remove and discard the stems, seeds, and excess liquids. Oh, by the way, right, when you grill the whole pepper with the stem on and everything, okay, then all you do is put the peppers in a food processor with the pine nuts, toasted pine nuts, grated garlic, one clove, 2 tablespoons, this is silly. About 1 lemon of lemon juice, okay?
That's a variable thing there.
Right. Well, they say 2 tablespoons plus 1 teaspoon lemon juice, right? Okay. Now, I would just do it to taste, right?
I like it tart.
Half teaspoon of salt and 1/4 cup of olive oil. And then you just blend it up, and there you have it.
That sounds good. It sounds very summery.
It does, and it sounds very simple.
Ooh,
you know, you're just toasting the nuts, blistering the pepper, and then everything goes in the food processor.
Good.
And then that would just doll up about any kind of dish you wanted to make. So there.
Ooh, thinking about peppers. I'm just planting my peppers now. It's been so dry in the spring, I've had things growing in the greenhouse, and now is the time to kind of squish that stuff outside.
Well, and it's finally not so dry. Thank goodness.
There was a news item I read the other day that Punxsutawney Phil, the groundhog that we look to announce spring, he became a father, and he has little groundhog pups in his den. So
In Pennsylvania.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
Yes, well, it is baby groundhog season, among other things.
And I bring that up because, yes, on Onion Creek Farm, it is baby groundhog season. I mean, I don't, you know, see one out in the field.
I saw one running across 8th Street the other day. And I'm like,
ooh. And they're so cute. But however.
Well, this was a big old guy lumbering along there. And then I stopped the car because I wanted to look at it and make sure what. He stood up and looked at me right back.
Except we have a new nest of, what are they called, pups or groundhoggettes or whatever they are. 4, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, And so,
how do you know?
Oh, because they were all out around this wood pile, way, way, way on the edge of the woods. And again, they stood up and looked at me.
Well, that's where they should be. You don't really want them living under your front porch.
Or eating my garden. Well, I've learned long ago that, well, they have lots to eat now. It's no problem. But they do love things like kale and cabbage. And they'll even nibble off tomatoes. So my husband Joe and I spent a day last week stringing electric fence, you know, about 4 inches off the ground, about groundhog height, around the, it's kind of like, well, you know, when husbands and wives do things together, it's kind of like Laurel and Hardy put up an electric fence. We dropped things, we got tangled, but it's up, it's working, and we are working away to keep the little groundhogs out of our garden. So far, so good. I've planted tomatoes, I've planted...
Okay, here's the annual question. How many varieties of tomatoes did you do this year, Lana?
I'm cutting back. I've got about 15.
Only 15? Okay, that is half of her,
it is.
Previous amounts. Okay.
It is. I decided, okay, we're just going to do these, not 50, maybe about 40 tomatoes out there in total, but,
okay.
You know, but less variety. Anyway. So I'm always glad when the tomatoes are up and running and the garden is going and the onions are up and the garlic is up. And I planted some red corn just because I think it's pretty. There's a variety called Bloody Butcher corn.
And this is what are you going to do with it?
Well, I got it as just an ornamental. I mean, it's a long red colored corn, but I'm going to try grinding it up because I've had luck with different kinds of red corn in the past. It's a dent corn, so we can give it a try.
Oh, goody. We can get out my famous corn grinder.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
And I remember last time I grew it, these are the giant corn stalks that I put away at the back of the garden. I remember last time I was just amazed at how tall they were, so we'll see. And I've got okra planted out there, and I'm okay. It's summer. It's time to plant that garden.
Here we go.
Here we go, and I'm looking forward to it. And groundhogs, stay away from my garden. Put your little noses up against that little electric fence, and you'll turn around real fast. Yes, you will. Well, I've got a news item here I would like to share. Tick-a-tick, 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 tick-a-tick. That's the Don Alana Kitchen ticker tape. We often refer to our news department that way. From the Des Moines Register, in West Des Moines, a book club that reads about sustainability, climate change, and environmental justice got tired of feeling helpless and decided to organize the planting of Iowa's first mini forest with the help of West Des Moines and Waukee Elementary School. The group read Hannah Lewis's book, Hannah Lewis, an ex-Amos person, and we have talked to her on the radio. But she wrote a book called The Mini Forest Revolution, using the Miyawaki method to rapidly rewild the world. And she spoke recently at Iowa State University, and the book club decided, we can do this. So the concept of a mini forest is just to take a small bit of land.
Did it say how big they're going to do?
Uh-huh. Let's see. It doesn't say.
Because the mini forest,
small.
You can make them small, medium, large, and super teeny weeny.
Right. Even
you can put one in your backyard.
In town. And what is nice about it is rewilding. You're not planting trees in rows or mowing around the bottom. You are actually learning about this process as you go, but you're planting all sorts of understory and leaving the ground kind of roughed up and leaving sticks and stuff there and hoping things to grow because trees and shrubs and plants grow better together. And if a community does this, people are doing this all over the world, the mini forest revolution. They're putting trees and groves and foresty things, even in cities and in neighborhoods.
And using this method of planting in certain successions and things like that to reclaim some badly damaged land.
Yeah, so we've known Hannah Lewis, the author, for quite a few years, and she wrote this book, and she was on our show in July of 2022. So you can look up that, Donald, on the show.
Right, you can pull the show up and listen to her talk about the method for.
But that's the mini forest revolution, and it's happening in Ames. Yes, it is. You're listening to KHOI, Community Radio for the Heart of Iowa, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. Go to the KHOI website and find lots of good things. There's recipes and archives for the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out about other shows, and I want to remind you about our membership drive. And I want to remind you like this, khoifm.org. /membership. That's where you want to be. So get that little tune in your head. Become a member, and thanks to you, if you are already a member, support this fine radio station. Welcome back. The Donalana Kitchen. We've got another sweet recipe to share from the Donalana Kitchen archives. Some good advice from Donna and me. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. This is this was from a few years ago discussing a pie. Lime pie. Well, lime pie. I got this recipe from online from the New York Times recipe people, and I said, I looked at that recipe, and I can do this recipe. It's a real simple sort of thing. It just has eggs, can of sweetened condensed milk, and lime juice, and that's about it for the filling. 5 large egg yolks plus 3 large egg whites, all at room temperature. 1 14-ounce can sweetened condensed milk. 2/3 cup fresh lime juice, and then some more lime zest for garnish if you would like. And that goes into a pie shell, and it was really good. It ended up really fluffy and nice. And
it was delicious.
Oh, I served some to Donna, and she said, it's a chiffon pie. And I hadn't heard that. I thought chiffon was the kind of stuff that 1930s movie starlets wore in their boudoirs.
Silk chiffon.
Oh, but
actually, even into the early 60s, I can remember one of my first dance party dresses that my mother made. The top was velvet and the bottom was silk chiffon, and that is a marvelous fabric.
It doesn't make a bad pie either.
No.
So it was called the Florida lime pie, not a key lime pie, because key limes you sit down are a specific lime.
Yeah, they're a little bit smaller than the kind of lime. I mean, sometimes you can get them in the grocery store here, but they're smaller, maybe like an inch into an inch and a half in diameter, as opposed to the usual ones that we see in the grocery store. And they have just a slightly different flavor, but they, I would say, for cooking are quite interchangeable.
Right, right. Well, this just happens to be the kind of lime that you can get in Iowa. Nothing fancy, but it does take quite a bit of lime juice, a 2/3 cup of lime juice. Also, it takes a can of sweetened condensed milk, and that's an interesting invention. We've had sweetened condensed milk, canned milk, has been around for a long time. And this has got the
sugar. Well, certainly in the 20th century,
That's a long time. We've been
both. Well, one more thing about the chiffon bit.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
The difference between a chiffon pie and like a lemon meringue. Maybe we'll make a lemon meringue this summer. I love a lemon meringue pie. But that does not, in that lemon meringue pie, you do not whip the egg whites. So to make the chiffon part, you have whipped the egg whites, which makes the fluffy thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Quite. It was very, very pretty, very light tasting.
Well, and she put whipped cream on top.
Well, it's here in the recipe, whipped cream for garnish, and something about that, the bite of the lime and whipped cream for garnish. Now, I have a question, Donna. Part of this recipe that you blind bake the pie crust. You make a regular pie crust with flour, salt, unsalted butter, and a little ice water, and make a pie crust. But you bake that in the oven before you put the filling in, and it says to use pie weights. I didn't have pie weights.
Right. Pie weights are kind of, it's like a long string of little metal beads, and you kind of just, the thing with blind baking, so it's when you need a pre-baked pie crust, like with a lemon meringue pie or a coconut cream pie, all of these old-timey favorites. So you cook the pie crust first, and you have to put a weight in the bottom of the pan, because if there's no filling in it, it kind of puffs up and flakes off.
Right.
So you use you use dried beans. That's another old.
I use dry beans.
And how many did you use?
Enough to fill the bottom.
Like a half cup or something?
Yeah, at least. Because enough to fill the bottom of the pie crust. I have tried it without putting any weight on there. I've learned my lesson. I had a poofy kind of pie crust cookie. No. So then I do have a question. The beans looked just fine. And then I had beans left over when I poured them out of the pie crust. I wonder if these are any good. So I soaked them, and I think we had bean soup that night. It seemed to work. I mean, it did go into a hot oven, but the beans will seem to be fine.
Well, the only thing it would do probably to the bean is dry them out further. Mm-hmm. So that would mean when you're rehydrating the beans, which is what you're doing when you're cooking a dried bean, you might just have to cook them longer. And also, here's the thing about dried beans. You know, people think they store forever, which they sort of do. But even in the process, over time, they get drier and drier and drier. So the older a bean is and the longer it's been stored, the longer you will have to cook it to make it soft. So I suppose the same thing would be if you'd already toasted them in the oven. You just cook them a little longer.
There you go.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's a guess, but.
This lime pie was a hit. I will make it again. It is very good. And you make the
all right, Lana, let's make a deal to have a lemon meringue pie this summer, too.
Oh, good idea. That kind of deal I can go with. I like that a lot. And again, what makes this a chiffon, a lovely light thing, is all of the beating of the eggs. You start out with 5 egg yolks separated, and you beat those egg yolks in. And with the condensed milk and the lime juice, and that's in one little bowl. In another bowl, there are 3 egg whites. I don't know what they do with the extra two egg whites you have left over. But then you beat those egg whites until they are stiff white peaks, and then you mix those two together, and you have a whole bowl full of puffy stuff. Then it says you put it in the cooled pie shell. And then you put
cooled
baked pie shell, right. The one that take the beans out first, please.
Right.
And then you put the pie back on in the oven and reduce the oven heat from 350 to 325 and cook for 20 minutes. So just to set the egg whites. And don't forget the whipped cream when you take it out later and serve it.
Well, see, now the difference between the chiffon and the not chiffon is almost like a chocolate. The difference between a chocolate mousse, which is fluffy, and a chocolate pudding, which is not fluffy. So that's kind of the equivalent.
Oh, good. Ah, talking about pie. I like making pies because it's like a circle. They're like a unit all of its own. It's good. I like pies.
Yeah, and because she likes it, she's a really good pie maker.
Well, it's fun. It's fun to play around with things. Yes.
I think we do a lot of dessert recipes just because it's the fun part of eating, right?
Well, also, as you mentioned, baking and dessert, you actually need recipes for. I mean, you do sort of have to follow a method to some sort of madness. You can't. My other kind of cooking tends to be, as my husband says, from the hip. I kind of make things up.
It's what do you got in the fridge to what goes into the skillet. Yeah.
A fine way to exist. I like it. And this time of year, there are things just to go out and gather and pan fry and have them for supper. I have recently pulled out, this is Donna's book, The Forager's Chef's Book of Flora by Alan Burgo. And he is a forager and a chef.
And he's a forager from Minnesota. So what he forages is very available also, you know, out around here.
I appreciate that. And he has a fine book here. And there's a page here that is entitled Wild Greens, I Like to Cook. And I have tried I've tried a lot of these, come to think of it. And because this has good pictures and I've been doing this for quite a few years, I'll just read the things that this stuff is all available around here. I know because I've tried.
And especially this time of year, yeah. It's all tender and wonderful.
Yeah. Here's some. Virginia waterleaf. Wild lettuces. I can never tell exactly what a wild lettuce is, but they look like dandelions. Then there's amaranth, pigweed. Ground elder. I don't know that one. I will have to look that one up. Okay. Common blue violet. Violets are lovely in a salad. Dame's rocket. Again, it looks sort of like a dandelion. Wild mustard. You can find that. And you can taste the difference. Taste the difference between a dandelion and a wild mustard. Chickweed. Chickweed is a lovely thing. Garden yellow rocket. Garlic mustard. Now, he's got this on the edibles, and I must say I don't care for the garlic mustard taste. But
Lon, I've never heard you decline something like
well,
that.
Well, I'll eat it, but it's not my favorite. Okay. Garlic mustard. Okay. Miner's lettuce was just a sweet little plant.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's lovely. And lamb's quarters.
They're everywhere.
If you don't know what lamb's quarters is, well, somebody will tell you, and it's a very good spinachy sort of thing to eat.
Quite likely you have some growing in your yard, unless you're an avid weeder.
Another one is called Galansoga, and that can take over a garden like crazy. It's a low-growing, little pointy leaf thing, and I did not know you could cook it, but since I
didn't know
it,
you could either, and I have some of that in my yard.
Mitsuba, which I don't know, that one I do not know. Common nettle.
Okay,
this is a
good time of the year for nettles, which are really, really, they're fun to pick with gloves, right? Yeah. But they're really, really good for you.
Yes, very good.
And they will help to counteract allergies, which we have a lot of this time of year from all the pollen.
So, like I said, I've tried a good chunk of those, and some of those are, well, okay, they're green, you can eat them, and some of those I look forward to. I look forward to nettles every year, and the violets coming up, and there's a lot of good things to eat. So that's some information from the Book of Flora by Alan Bergo.
B-E-R-G-O. He has a newsletter that he sends out frequently that Lon and I use, so you can Google him and sign up for his newsletter. It's always interesting.
Good. Well, we've talked about good stuff today, and thanks to Tom Russell for joining us. Donna, tell folks about our podcast.
Yeah, the same material that you hear us right now talking about on the radio is also available in podcast form. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you just type in Donna Lonna, that's one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, kitchen, and there we will be.
Good. We have an upcoming to talk about this tomorrow, Wednesday, from 5 to 8. There's going to be kind of an impromptu downtown Ames Farmers Market on 5th Street.
Right, not on Main Street. It's on 5th Street.
After sundown, celebrating 515, which is our area code, but it also is 515.
May 15th.
Oh, May 15th. Look at that. Aren't we clever? A farmer's market.
So you went to the farmer's market this weekend on Saturday.
Yes. It was lovely. There were tons and tons of people.
Did you say that they were counting and there was over?
Oh, good heavens. Jim Peterson was counting on, his thumb got tired of clicking. He got way over 1,000 people in an hour going by him. So,
that's
wonderful
to have that kind of turnout.
It's
all
good.
For food.
celebrate
food is a popular
food.
Thing here in town.
Yes. Well, you've been listening to the Donna Lonna Kitchen. And we urge you to support KHOI. Go to khoifm.org/membership and be part of this wonderful organization. We had music by the Barnall Band today. You heard them playing Johnson Boys. My name is Lonna Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.